From Sundress Media Productions, this is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host is Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
If you want the truth, you should seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of. You.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. This is the end of the meeting. It's the beginning of the movement. Thank you.
Yeah. Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
From the beautiful tropical Tampa Bay area, this is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 3rd of February, 2014. I'm your host, Mark Skogman. I'd like to recognize a couple of people tonight. First, I would like to recognize Bill McCullough for his special assistance to the Spectrum 360 program today. He deserves an associate producer credit for his assistance to the program today. Also, later on in the program, I'll be joined by associate producer Terry Weeks as co-host with this program. So thank you to Terry and thank you to Bill for their assistance today. Invaluable to this program. Okay, in Spectrum 360, on this edition, segment one, we are going to speak about the case of Paula Whithouse. Last week, either on Sunday, January 26th, or Monday, January 27th, Paula Whithouse was found brutally murdered along with her housemate at her residence at 2840 17th Avenue North. We are going to speak about this case, the crime, what's happened, the aftermath, and where we are with the attack and the police investigation. Online with us, live, an interview via telephone with Chuck Turgeon and Kofi Hunt, both of Awake Pinellas. Awake Pinellas is a progressive political organization that Paula Whithouse was a member of. We will be speaking with them about the case of Paula Whithouse. After that, we are going to have Jennifer Rubiello on the program, speaking about the environment and Environment Florida and fracking and a number of issues. Just coincidentally, today I was on the east coast of Florida in Cocoa Beach, or rather Cocoa, at the Florida Solar Energy Center. We had a group of us had a special tour arranged by the director of the center, James Fenton, Dr. James Fenton. He's a PhD. And we got an excellent tour of the Florida Solar Energy Center. It was flat out excellent. And I met Dr. Fenton today. This man knows more about solar energy than any man I've ever met, probably by far. So we'll speak about that. And I hope to be speaking about that in the context of fracking. And we'll speak. I'll speak a little bit about my experiences today with Jennifer as well and get her perspective on that. Fracking versus solar energy and renewable energy overall. So just the fact that I was at that center today gives a new complexion to the interview that we'll be conducting with Jennifer later on in the program. And after that, we're going to have a couple of other segments. I'll keep them as a surprise. And we're going to go right now to the first segment, and that is the case of Paula Whithouse. Now, do we have our Cedric? Do we have our callers on the line? Yes, we do. It's a go. Great. Okay, welcome Chuck Churchian and Kofi Hunt to the program. Say hello to our listeners.
How you doing?
Hello, Chuck. Is Kofi there as well?
Maybe he's on mute on his end.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great. Okay, this first segment is about Paula Whithouse and the case of that shocked the progressive political community in the St. Petersburg area and indeed Pinellas County in general. Paula Whithouse was 54. She lived with another man, and he was a 67-year-old man, which she had taken in because he had medical problems. She was a very generous person, and she was found dead in her house along with her housemate on Tuesday, I believe, which was the 28th of January, by a worker that worked at the house, who was very shocked to find this brutal crime had been committed. And since then, this last Friday, which was the 31st of January, at the residence there at 2840 17th Avenue North, there was a vigil to remember Paula, candlelight vigil. It was covered by the media. There's been at least a couple of articles in the Tampa Bay Times about this case, and also multiple television segments on television news. I know I saw one on Bay News 9, and I believe there were video segments on other Bay Area television news programs as well about this case. It's been a shock to the progressive community, to her friends, and to her family to find her murdered in such a brutal way. Now, we don't have all the details of how the attack was conducted. Basically, all I know up to this point, and this is approximately a week after the crime has been committed, is that there was trauma to the upper body. But in any case, she is definitely no longer with her. I knew Paula, and we're going to speak with a couple of activists who spoke, who knew her and worked with her even closer than I have over the last few months. So, Chuck and Kofi, give me your comments about Paula and your experience with her. Let's remember her here. Go back to when you first met her and just tell her what kind of a person she was, and your involvement with her and what she did with Awake Pinellas and other organizations.
I'll go ahead and start.
Please do.
I met Paula, I don't know, maybe 6 years ago or something like that, at the USF St. Petersburg in the leadership program. She was in my class. And as you know, Paula was an older woman getting her degree. And she was so over the top. She definitely wasn't afraid to say, but like, I just, at first I didn't know what to do with her. I didn't know like if she was going to be the annoying person in class or something like that, but she was funny. And then not only was she funny, she was insightful. She was smart, you know, mm-hmm. and you could tell she had lived a life, you know, and she'd been through some ups and downs, you know. She just had that in her perspective. But it was just, she always was quick with a joke or to light up your smoke.
was that an original line, Chuck?
No, not at all. But she did smoke, and so she did make friends with other smokers. I don't smoke cigarettes, but she definitely... you know, and at the time you could actually smoke on USF St. Petersburg campus. But yeah, she's somebody that when you first meet her, like, and actually she'd grown since I'd met her, and she used to just barely ride that line between good taste and bad taste on things. But
kind of made her interesting to know her, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, because she didn't know what she was going to say.
Yeah.
And she wasn't taking into consideration someone's comfort level necessarily, and on purpose too. It's not because she didn't know how; it's because, you know, she was saying what she thought needed to be said. You know, that kind of thing. After a couple of years ago, I knew her from class. Didn't really get to know her that well over the last couple of years. I got an opportunity to actually, you know, hear more from her and see her grow in a lot of ways, because she, her longtime partner, John Beyer, died basically due to a lack of health care. He was self-pay. He went into the emergency room for, I think, a herniated lining in his abdomen, and they barely patched him up, sent him on his way. There ended up being some complications. He couldn't see a specialist because there was no specialists that were required to see self-pay, and they refused to see him because he didn't have insurance. And
yeah, that is one terrible thing about the current healthcare system in this country. It's a real tragedy and something that was so unnecessary. And I think that that really energized her as an activist, don't you think?
Absolutely. And that's where it brings in with where she started to become involved and wanted to advocate her issue, but other issues too. She didn't, she just was sick. She got sick of complaining about all the bad things. And she was very cynical, but she was also optimistic, which is, I don't know how that works, but she was hopeful and she worked towards things, even if she was cynical about the overall thing. And but that's really what brings her into where, you know, after I graduated, you know, from the USF political science program and the leadership minor program that I met her in, I started to get involved in more community organizing and stuff. And then she said, I got to do something about this. Help me, you know. And Christian, myself, Kofi, you know, she started showing up at meetings. We started, doing and bestowing what knowledge we could. But that basically brings us to, where Kofi can come in, where he met her.
Yes, Kofi, go ahead and take over. Give us your comments and your perspective on Paula Whithouse and your experience with her.
Yeah, no, I mean, Paula was a real go-getter. When I met her at Occupy St. Pete, there were hundreds of people out there, and Christian, he's with Awake Penelope.
Christian who?
Christian Haas. He brought her to me and because she wanted to figure out how she could advocate about her longtime partner who died. And, I listened to her story and I gave her some tips, and then I suggested that she come to the meeting, and explain her issue there and we could work through it. And, you know, a lot of people come to me with problems, and a lot of times they like to talk about them, but they don't follow up about them. So I didn't really expect much. But, she came to the meetings and she, engaged about it and talked about her issue. And then at the end of the day, she took it upon herself to take it to the next level and started a nonprofit to fight for it. So I really gained a lot of respect for her because of that. And then when the Medicaid expansion fight came around last year, she took it. She went to Tallahassee to advocate for herself and others and tell her story about her partner that died. And, to me, she was an example of really how people should be when they say they care about issues. And, I don't know. I really appreciated her and her energy. And yeah.
So now where are we at with her case? Do you know exactly what is happening, what the latest is from the police? Do either of you know that? I know that there was a reward set up through Crime Stoppers. Is that correct? Can you elaborate on that?
From what I understand, we started to try and contact Crime Stoppers last week, and they finally got back to us, I think, today. And from what I understand with Crime Stoppers, is any active case, and they will provide a reward. They're not affiliated with the police, so that way you can also do anonymous tips and things like that. And I can give those numbers too. You know what I mean?
Yes, please do.
You can leave a confidential tip at 727-892-5000. I believe that's the police line.
Now, can you give that number out one more time?
Yeah, that's 727-892-5000. But the Crime Stoppers tip line, if there's anybody that's looking to get any kind of reward and that could lead to an arrest, we would be really appreciative. And that's 1-800-873-5000. And, of course, they spelled it out, T-I-P-S. So I can almost do the math on that. That's going to be
800-873. We're putting it on the spot.
Yeah, T-I-P-S.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what those last four.
Yeah, everybody can figure that out.
I'm looking at, yeah. Yeah, they offer $1,000 reward. They say up to $1,000 reward. I believe with like a capital case like this, it is $1,000 reward.
That's great.
And so we are, you know, trying to get the word out about that because somebody somewhere saw something. The police, you know, did their job in the neighborhood and such, and probably found out if anybody saw anything there. But you know, I'm guessing that this person was seen somewhere else, and from the basic description that we've gotten from the police, I don't think that they were very clean, and so, you know, and or they might have talked, you know. So if anybody hears anything that sounds remotely like this case, you know, it's just really horrible. I mean, Paul is a great, you know, activist and everything, and some of us were very close to her, but, you know, just she was an older woman that, you know, was murdered. And outside of that, Jim, her housemate, was bedridden. They murdered him, too. So the person that did this is particularly horrible. And I'm hoping that they, you know, they said something to somebody. And so if anybody hears it, anything similar to that situation, someone talking about it, please call the numbers you know, let's get the police a lead that they may have more leads, but they haven't announced anything.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this case is such an outrage. I'm just personally outraged by this, and I was really touched when I went to the vigil on Friday evening that there was a state representative there, Dwight Dudley,
yeah,
and also City of St. Petersburg city council members Steve Cornell, Amy Foster, and Darden Rice were there. It was rather extraordinary. Three city council members and a state representative just at this vigil, and the weather was bad. It was in the rain, and yet I know both of you spoke and were very moving, and Dwight Dudley spoke, and everybody who spoke was passionate and had some great things to say about Paula, and that was just extraordinary. Out in the rain there with what, probably about 100 candles. It was
yeah,
it was very moving.
It was, and it was very overwhelming, too. You know what I mean? And beautiful. You know, I've never experienced anything like it, honestly.
I know, and you were very moved, Chuck. I believe I saw some tears in your eyes at one point.
Oh, absolutely. I was doing my best to fight it back so I could keep it together enough to... I literally, a minute before that, I was asked if I would say something and maybe introduce the pastor, and then I found myself facilitating other people talking as well.
And you did a great job too, I have to admit. That was excellent.
I appreciate that, but literally I was just trying to hold it together enough to you know, honor Paula and have the strength to, you know, allow other people, you know, feel comfortable enough to speak. And there was quite a few people that ended up speaking, and I hope some of those people come and speak at the celebration of life we have planned on Sunday. The family has decided on a place and everything.
Let's wrap up this segment by giving the details on that for people that are able to attend. Because I believe some people, in fact, it might be my case personally, that I might be coming from Ledger Camp to that. Can you give us details so we can coordinate that for the people that may be doing that?
Yeah, there's two events, actually, that I'd like to make sure everyone knows about. One is the Celebration of Life, and that is at, where is it, the Presbyterian Church here. I'm looking for the information. Okay, here it is. At the Maximo Presbyterian Church, on Sunday, February 9th at 4 p.m., and that's located at 3200 58th Avenue South in St. Petersburg. And, yeah, we're hoping there'll be a few people that speak at that, and supposedly, you know, I've been told they have a very nice, you know, service plan there. So,
well, great. Thank you so much for coming on Spectrum 360 and talking about this case.
I wanted to announce another event, though. Sorry.
Sure, yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead. By all means. No problem.
We're doing a benefit. One of the projects we're starting to work on is a benefit for Mercy Keepers, which is the food kitchen she just recently got a grant for.
Oh, great.
And that she did volunteer at from time to time. And it's a pantry that we're doing a benefit for to help raise money for renovation so that they can have more capacity to store food. They actually get a decent amount of food, I guess, sent to them, but they don't even have the facilities to store it. So we're doing that on Sunday, the following Sunday, Sunday, February 16th at 3 p.m., and that's at the Amsterdam, which is it's right on the corner of Central Avenue and 11th and 11th Street. And they also have a box that's out front that's collecting canned goods. And that's out from like 3 to 3 daily. But Gennaro's Coffee is now going to be also offering a box out front to drop off any canned goods.
Great. I didn't know about that.
And that'll be they'll be available earlier in the day for people that would have to swing by it on the way to work or something like that. And that's right next door to the Amsterdam, right there on the 10 to 1100 block of Central Avenue.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Kofi Hunt and Chuck Chergian of Awake Pinellas. Thank you so much for appearing on Spectrum 360 and giving us an update on the case. I am going to be following this case on subsequent programs. We're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to get this case solved and have justice served and have the community made safer, because as of this moment, this killer has not been caught, and we are going to change that. Everyone in Awake Pinellas, I believe, is committed to that. I am. My co-host Terry is, I believe, correct?
Just showed up. Hi, guys.
And everyone who knows her, we're going to get to the bottom of this. So thank you so much for appearing this evening on Spectrum 360.
Okay, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, maybe it's the papers, maybe it's the family, maybe it's the internet, radio, TV, maybe it's the president, maybe it's the last one, maybe it's the one before that. Maybe it's the athletes, maybe it's the ads, maybe it's the sports fans, agents, fans, maybe it's the homeless, aliens, immigrants, maybe it's life.
Okay, great. This is Spectrum 360. Thank you for staying with us. We are going to segment two for this program, which is Monday, the 3rd of February, 2014. Remember to like us on Facebook. Go to www.facebook.com. Spectrum 360 radio program. Like the program. And also remember the podcast at www.tantalk1340.com. That's T-A-N-T-A-L-K 1340.com. Go to podcast and go to Spectrum 360. We've got 22 programs there, and after midnight tonight, we'll have 23 for you to listen to. All good content. We work very hard to give you a good Spectrum 360 every program. Okay, let's go to the next segment. I'm going to introduce, live in the studio for an interview, Jennifer Rubiello, the beautiful, articulate, and wonderful Jennifer Rubiello. And you're with Environment Florida, correct?
I am. Thanks, Mark and Terry, for having me.
You're welcome. Let me adjust your mic just a little bit so we can hear you just a little better.
Sure.
There we go. She'll be able to hear you just excellent.
A little better?
Perfect.
There you go.
Very good. Okay, Jennifer, explain to me what Environment Florida is and what your involvement is with it. And I know you've been very involved in the fracking issue, especially in the Naples, Florida area. Definitely want to speak about that. So take it away and tell us more about what's going on and your organization.
Sure. Well, thanks for asking. Well, so as you and some may know, Environment Florida is a state-based, citizen-supported environmental advocacy organization. So we're dedicated to protecting Florida's clean water, promoting clean energy, and conserving our natural special places. And so we're determined, obviously, then to keep dirty drilling, especially the process known as fracking, in whatever form, out of the Everglades.
Thank you. Yes, and speaking of fracking, you know, ever since I saw the documentary film Gasland 1, and then subsequently saw the follow-up film, Gasland 2. I've been very concerned about fracking and its effect on water quality all across the country, especially in the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania, in New York. But this is not just a northeastern or even a western issue. It's also a southern issue right in this state. In fact, I have to thank you for making me more aware of the fact that there is fracking going on in the state. That actually, it's been a long-term process. There's been some version of this, some form of this practice happening in the state for approximately 30 years. I was rather astonished to find that out because, you know, we think of fracking as something that's just a very recent phenomenon. And all of a sudden, I'm hearing about the fact that it's been going on in some form or another down in Naples. Now, there was an event down in Naples just recently, and I wish I had been able to go that day. I wasn't able to go. What was that event? Just refresh my memory on that. There were a number of people that went down there for an event down there that was anti-fracking.
Sure. You mean during the Everglades conference?
Yes, I believe so. I think that's what I'm referring to.
Sure. There are a number of obviously clearly concerned citizens who are on the front lines of dirty drilling or potentially this drilling in their backyards who have been mounting a campaign to get the permits for drilling in their backyards overturned.
This is the Naples area, which is right next to the Everglades, correct?
Right.
And this was started by local activists that's grown into a larger coalition of people all across the state. Is that correct? Is that accurate to say that?
Yeah. So just to give some context, last year the Florida Department of Environmental Protection granted close to a dozen permits to oil and gas companies for exploratory oil wells in the Panhandle and in Collier County. So that's just miles away from the Everglades. And in the Big Cypress, in the Big Cypress National Preserve. I think that's key.
That sounds so terrible. You've got a cypress preserve there, and then there's going to be fracking? Wow.
What is it about fracking that makes it particularly detrimental to the environment for some who don't understand a lot about it?
Sure. So it's important to look at the people's definition of fracking. So our definition of fracking is that it encompasses the whole production process. So from the initial, the whole process of bringing any kind of oil or gas to extraction.
Okay, and Jennifer, I'm going to stop you right there because we're going to break for 5 minutes for network news and commercial messages. We're going to come back with more Jennifer Rubiello on fracking and Environment Florida in exactly 5 minutes.
Maybe owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Have you been scammed or received poor customer service? Did a business or person take advantage of you? Would you like to learn how to protect yourself? Then tune in every Thursday night at 11 for the Half Empty, Half Full radio show. We'll help you learn what to look out for and how to protect yourself. Contact us on Facebook at Half Empty, Half Full radio show on 1340 AM Tan Talk. And if you have a story idea, call us at 813-500-6064 during business hours. It's the Half Empty, Half Full radio show, Thursday nights at 11 on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
While it's not always wise to cram before a test, if you're a high school or college student, it is wise to hit the Lightning Ticket Office at the last minute. Student Rush, presented by Subway Restaurants, is back. And students get the best available seats to every Lightning game for just $20. Tickets go on sale 15 minutes before puck drop.
And the first 100 students will score a coupon for a free Subway breakfast sandwich.
Get your degree in Lightning hockey with Student Rush. Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the Thunder.
You know, for a long time, the saying in Clearwater has been, there's no place to eat in downtown Clearwater. Well, those days are over because Mix Bar and Grill, a brand new restaurant, is here.
Yes, it is. We are at 528 Cleveland Street. That is downtown at the corner of Cleveland Street and Garden Avenue. And we are open from 7 a.m. for breakfast, and we have lunch, dinner, and the restaurant closes at 9 p.m. That includes happy hour from 2 to 7 p.m., we're featuring 2-for-1 drinks and 50 cent swings. Crystal, tell us about the nightclub.
Well, we got a couple nights going on. Wednesday night, we have dollar drinks from 10 p.m. till 3 a.m. Free cover all night. Friday night is ladies' night. They drink free till midnight. We're open from 10 p.m. till 3 a.m. No cover all night. Then on Saturday night, it's 2-for-1 drinks till midnight. Again, free cover 10 p.m. till 3 a.m.
That's absolutely amazing. So at last, we got a place with action in downtown Clearwater.
This is John Austin, the host of Tan Talks, the Book Club, a program that spotlights undiscovered authors and their books. If you are a published author and feel that your book has not had the exposure it deserves and you would like to be considered for a guest spot in the book club, email your name, the title of your book, along with a brief synopsis of the book to bookclub1340@gmail.com. Be sure to include your contact information. And
be sure and join me, John Austin, on the Book Club every Tuesday morning at 10 on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
From the Sunshine State, this is Tampa Bay's Tan Talk.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360. This edition for Monday, the 3rd of February, 2014. I'm Mark Skogman, and with me is associate producer Terry Weeks. One more time, I would like to express my appreciation for Bill Boccolo. He gave special assistance to the program today, and I have to say that I think he deserves an associate producer.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill, once again. Great job in assisting the program today. Okay, back with Jennifer Rubiello from Environment Florida. We're going to pick up where we left off with information about the issue of fracking in the Naples, Florida area. Remember, this is right next to the Everglades, and as we spoke about before the break, it's by a cypress preserve. So there's multiple reasons that this is a problem. So Jennifer, give us further information on this.
Sure. So just to reiterate, close to a dozen. There's several permits that have been granted for exploratory wells that are, you know, just a stone's throw from the Everglades, and they're in the Big Cypress National Preserve. So that's a problem.
Isn't that going to be detrimental for the wildlife and disruptive in general?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Obviously, that would pose a problem. It's actually right next to the panther habitat. So
oh, great.
We're definitely concerned. And so the US EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, followed suit, and they approved disposal well in Big Cypress Swamp watershed. So that's an area that it's actually considered panther habitat, and it's near the future drinking water supplies for pretty much all of Collier County.
Say that one more time. I want to focus on that. Say that sentence one more time so it sinks in for people. What did you just say?
So the disposal well would be in an area right near the future drinking water supplies for pretty much all of Collier County.
So, I mean, the obvious problem with that is that this has a great potential for contaminating the drinking water supply source for potentially thousands to tens of thousands of people. And the Naples area, you know, that's one of the richest areas of Florida. So you have middle class, upper middle class people in that area. There's a lot of high value homes, et cetera, et cetera. And this is one of the areas that's threatened. You know, this isn't some backwater. It's not a zoned industrial area that's in a small area that's maybe a Superfund site. This is a large area, and this affects a lot of people in that area, correct?
Well, yeah, and to be clear, the drill site that we're trying to stop is only 1,000 feet from people's homes. So it's, again, located in the Big Cypress Swamp mm-hmm. watershed, and mm-hmm. it's a really critical recharge area in the Everglades. And so ultimately, the EPA's final decision, so they've approved the disposal well, but their final decision pends on a hearing that's just been set for March 11th down in Naples. Really important date, March 11th. And ultimately, that hearing will determine whether or not this wastewater injection well is approved, and ultimately whether or not the process of, we're calling it acid fracking, would be acidizing, which I can go into.
Now, let me ask you a couple more questions about that, because this is an important issue. My understanding is a lot of times, well, as we know, fracking is going on all across the country, and the fracking companies are claiming, proprietary trade secrets mm-hmm. on the chemicals that are in the fracking fluids. These vary, from what I understand, across the country. They're not necessarily uniform from the Marcellus Shale to maybe what's happening in New York to what's happening in Florida. And acid fracking, this is something specifically different than what's happening, say, in the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania, correct?
Sure. Yeah, there's definitely a few differences. So acid fracking is a process involving, or it's also called acidizing, is a process that involves the injection of toxic chemicals below the aquifer to dissolve and free up any dirty fossil fuels.
Florida's geology, it's largely limestone, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken, which is very porous.
In the Naples area.
And throughout much of Florida. And we're not concerned about possibly contamination and seepage through the porous limestone into water supplies?
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's the concern.
Yeah.
So water quality is a concern, and also water quantity. Each well is permitted to use 5 million gallons of wastewater per month. And then unlike...
That's a lot of water.
It's a lot of water, especially in a state where we've been starting to experience some real drought.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike agricultural water, the drilling water can never be reused.
Yeah, once it's out of the water cycle like that, it's gone.
Exactly. It's permanently polluted, and it has to be injected into an area called the boulder zone.
One quick question about that. If all this water is being extracted, and we know that it's a very water-intensive process, doesn't this also exacerbate the problem of saltwater intrusion with all that groundwater being taken out of the water so close to the coast? Is there any problem with that you're aware of? I mean, I know it has to have the potential that close to the coast for more saltwater intrusion into the freshwater, but is there any specific information you have about that as being a problem in that specific area?
I'm not a scientist.
Yeah, and I know I'm putting you on the spot with this question.
Well, what I can say is that the area where the wastewater would be injected is an area that is, according to research, is potentially linked to, it is, the Gulf and the Atlantic. So, in essence, it's porous. So, it's limestone, it's porous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's right below the aquifer, and then it could also seep into the Atlantic and the Gulf, and that's another really big concern.
And the Gulf
ours.
Has had enough contamination lately.
Exactly.
Wow. Now, on March 11th, there's going to be an EPA, and this is the Environmental Protection Agency, field hearing in the Naples area. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So I mentioned earlier, the EPA is holding a public hearing on the wastewater injection well. So where all the waste fluid would then come up from the ground and then have to be re-injected because it can never be reused.
And is that specifically what this hearing is going to be about?
Yes.
And there's going to be public input periods during this field hearing. Is your understanding? Is that correct?
Exactly. So we are, along with other groups, urging the EPA to reject, obviously, the wastewater injection permit so that, we can close the door on any kind of acid fracking or drilling. Now, it's really important that organization and folks across the state, one, send in public comments. But most importantly, if you can actually show up to the hearing.
And where is this going to take place?
So it's going to take place near Naples, the Golden Gate Community Center, I believe. I can follow up with you on that.
Okay.
95%.
Yeah, that's what I believe
sure.
That's what I read. I don't have it in front of me, but that does sound correct. I haven't looked at it today. I've had such a busy day, but yeah, I believe that does sound correct. So that's going to be an important hearing. I'd like to recommend that people, if anybody who's concerned about the environment or fracking or groundwater and drinking water quality, they should attend this hearing. You know, these hearings don't happen real often, especially in the state of Florida. The only other federal agency hearings I've ever attended in Florida have been the Federal Communications Commission. So EPA hearings are a relatively rare event, and the public should take advantage of this to do their public input, you know, whether pro or con, for or against. This is an opportunity to address the federal government agency that has really the most insight or oversight, rather, into this issue. So this is an important hearing. Remember, that's March 11th. That's Tuesday. And that's also Election Day in the Pinellas County area. That's when the special election.
So vote first.
Exactly.
And then go to the
vote
hearing.
Vote first and then happen, yes. Carpool down to the hearing. The hearing will start. There'll be an information session from 4 to 6. And then the key part really is the public comment period, which is from 6:30 to 8:30. So if anything, definitely make it for that.
Plenty of time to vote.
Exactly.
6:30 to 8:30. Now, tell us about shale field stories. A little bit of information about that.
Great. Yeah, thanks for asking. So Environment Florida Research and Policy Center just recently released Shale Field Stories. So essentially a booklet and a compilation of stories from residents on the front lines of fracking in Pennsylvania that are recounting their stories of, you know, of illness, water contamination, and ultimately damage to their livelihoods because of this dirty drilling. And so there's definitely a few stories that serve as a important warning to what's going on down here. So one in particular, so June Chapel, who's from Washington County in Pennsylvania, she actually lived with a 15 million gallon fracking waste pit just 200 feet from her house.
Oh my gosh.
Imagine that.
Oh man.
Then we have Judy Armstrong Stiles, who is from Bradford County, Pennsylvania. She spoke about, you know, the story talks about her barium and arsenic that was found in her drinking water and then seeped into her blood.
Yeah.
And then I think the most pertinent is a story about Randy, gentleman named Randy Moyer, who began suffering from extreme migraines, kidney and liver problems, and burning rashes after he started working trucking wastewater from a fracking site in Pennsylvania.
Now, some of these people have brought suit against the companies and have settled, and those people are not allowed to discuss the details of their situation any longer. They had to sign non-disclosure agreements,
because
right?
I noticed in Gasoline 1 and 2, there were some examples that were cited in the film of that exact thing, where it's basically a gag order as part of the settlement. So not only do the fracking companies get rid of the problems they have with these people, but then there's no further information that can be disseminated about it, too. That's just ridiculous. So do you know if in Shale Field Stories it includes any of the people that were highlighted in the films Gasland 1 or 2? Do you happen to know that by any chance? I was just curious if you knew.
I do know.
I know I'm putting you on the spot with this.
It's been a while since I've seen Gasland.
It's not like you know every detail of the documentary film.
Well, I do know there's definitely, I do know like the mayor of Dish, Texas, who's been interviewed quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
He's in there. A lot of the folks that are interviewed,
yeah.
A lot of the folks that are interviewed in the booklet, they've been interviewed quite a bit, and so their words on paper are a way to hopefully disseminate their stories more widely across the country, and you know they should serve as a huge warning to the kind of practices.
Absolutely, it's a public health hazard. It's a water. It's going to contaminate potable water. Not to mention the greenhouse gas emissions that will result from the use of these fuels once we've gotten them out of the ground.
And speaking of that, I'd like to transition right at this moment to the fact that I attended a special tour that was given by James Fenton, who's the director of the Florida Solar Energy Center today. Now, this is in Cocoa, Florida. It's all the way on the east coast of Florida, all the way across the state from here today. And it was just rather interesting that we had Jennifer scheduled on the program today. And then I saw this great presentation at the Florida Solar Energy Center, where we have the alternatives to fracking. And I was so impressed. James Fenton is a doctor, and he's a very knowledgeable man. I, in my estimation, he knows more about solar energy than any person I've ever met and any other individual. He was just astonishingly knowledgeable. And he gave a group of 14 people, which included Corey Westbrook, who's a candidate for U.S. Congress from that area of Florida. She's currently campaigning right now against David Posey, I believe, is the incumbent that she's opposing. She was there as well. And James Fenton did indicate to us that his political affiliation is Republican, and yet he was so knowledgeable about this subject and so supportive of solar energy. So here we are talking about fracking, which is a, you know, a very dangerous, dirty, polluting process. And then we have this great solar energy center. We got the red carpet treatment at the facility. We actually had a tour that was twice as long as planned, and it was a long time. We got the record for the longest tour in that facility that's ever happened. So I want to give a special, special thank you to James Fenton for this fantastic tour that we got today. So I just find it rather interesting that we've got the two flip sides of this issue, where we've got solar energy, which is non-polluting, and here in that same state where this is underutilized, and which is really a source of clean energy for this state that stays in the state, that generates jobs, that generates income, and here we're doing fracking in the same state, this dirty, polluting, old technology, which should be phased out. Do you have any perspective on the Florida Energy Center, or just solar in general as a renewable resource, and specifically in the state of Florida? Does Environment Florida have any specific positions on renewables or anything to do with solar in the state of Florida?
Absolutely. We think we should be moving towards 100% clean energy future. That's the bottom line. Dirty energy like coal-fired power plants, fracking, those are all holding us behind. They're a public health threat. They're an environmental threat. At the end of the day, we're seeing folks working in the solar industry who are leaving the state because we don't have the kinds of policies that would support folks working in the solar industry.
But we've been told that solar is not feasible in Florida.
It is in Germany, and they have less sun than Florida does. And yeah, I got to say, here's this man, a very learned man, who's a Republican, and Republicans are not particularly known for their support of environmental issues, and yet this man was passionate about solar power, and he really showed us with a tremendous amount of information just how great solar is. And it's not just from maybe a political perspective where, conservatives are stereotyped as being anti-environment and liberals are stereotyped as being pro-environment, sometimes at the expense of sanity or practicality. This man showed us just exactly how practical solar energy is and can be in the state of Florida. It's like the answer to just about everything. He is going to a conference in March that's being sponsored by utility companies, where he's going to basically say, you're planning these coal-fired power plants, these natural gas-fired power plants, possibly, there's a small percentage of power plants that have auxiliary generators that use oil. And then, of course, there are nuclear plants. And he basically says, you don't need any of this. And not only is the solar energy better and less polluting, it's cheaper. It's going to be cheaper than anything else, especially nuclear power, where you have these hugely expensive nuclear power plants. Why would we put all this investment into nuclear power plants, which is the most expensive way to generate electricity, when we've got all this sunshine in Florida? Germany's doing it. They have less sunshine than us. New Jersey is doing much better than the Sunshine State on terms of solar energy. And that just boggles my mind. They're way up north from here, and yet they're beating us. And Germany's beating us. It's just crazy. So I suggest to people, do an internet search for Florida Solar Energy Center and get on these websites. There's a tremendous amount of excellent information, which we saw just the tip of the iceberg of today, that shows us that solar is the way for Florida. And not only is it just philosophically better and just practically better in terms of the reduction of pollution and so forth, but it's actually a cheaper and better source. It's a cheaper source than all these other resources, and it's renewable. Florida jobs. It keeps the industry and all the money spent in the industry right in the industry of Florida itself. So go to that website. There's a tremendous amount of information there. We need to get educated in this subject because this is critical. And whether you believe in climate change or not, and I think one thing I want to mention is the fact that last week on Tuesday, President Obama gave the State of the Union address, and he did talk about environmental issues, and he did talk about renewables to some extent, but we need to impress upon Congress and the president that this is what we want, and this is actually the best, most practical thing to do. And this very knowledgeable Republican is going to make this exact point to a conference of utility personnel in March. So he's going to go right there head to head and say, you're considering gas, you're considering coal, you're considering nuclear. This is better than any of those things. It's cheaper, it's better, it's more controllable. And he made this point over and over today also that, and we all know this when we think about this, is the fact that when we're using coal or oil or natural gas, a lot of times these minerals are coming from foreign countries, and that, well, as he put it, they hate us. Why are we giving all this money to people that hate us, to quote him? So this is also a national security issue. And another point I'd like to make just briefly is the fact that when you count the actual true cost, and he was all over the concept.
I was hoping you were going to bring up true cost accounting.
A true cost accounting. This was an aspect of this whole aspect of renewables versus non-renewables that he addressed over and over today. Why aren't we not doing true cost accounting? And when you do that, I've heard quotes of the fact that the military that we have to keep in place to protect our oil pipelines from the Middle East, and I know oil production is up in this country, but we still are dependent on foreign sources as well. I've seen estimates that put that as high as $20 per gallon for gasoline, the cost of our military alone just to make sure that those pipelines are open. And all it takes is one terrorist to mine the Straits of Hormuz, and we're going to see a huge spike in world oil prices, and that could happen at any time.
So that's we're also not taking into account all the costs of this dirty energy. For one thing, the oil, gas, fossil fuels are heavily subsidized by the federal government. They're getting tremendous subsidies. That's one of the reasons they're so cheap, and we pay so much less for gas than say Europe does. Also, all the other costs that they create, the public health costs, the water contamination cost, all of those things, they don't pay for. We pay for, either with their tax dollars or our failing health. They are not paying the true cost of obtaining and using those fuels. So that's another part of true cost accounting. When you look at solar, a solar spill is a nice sunny day.
That's exactly right. Now, Jennifer, going forward, we're coming close to the end of the program here in about 2 or 3 minutes. What's the future for Environment Florida and these issues in terms of Naples and fracking, just all across the state of Florida? Can you give us what's projected in terms of the next few weeks and months in terms of the actions that Environment Florida is going to be taking on these issues?
Sure. Thanks for asking. Well, so we are in the process of doing widespread state outreach for the March 11th EPA hearing, obviously, because it's not just about the disposal well. If we can get this permit overturned, ultimately that'll show the oil and gas industry that folks in Florida are paying attention and won't let this happen in our backyards in our state, and really it shouldn't be happening anywhere in the country. So that's coming up now. We're also working on a couple different issues. Clean water, obviously, we've seen across the state, is picking up.
Are there any actions or specific events projected for like the late spring and summer that are being planned now that you're aware of, or is it a little too early to ask about that?
Well, I can say in the next couple months, definitely. So we're actually going to be releasing America on the Move on February 11th.
Now, what is that? America on the Move.
Yeah, so it's actually a really exciting report released by Environment Florida Research and Policy Center that's going to look at how far we've come in terms of cutting carbon emissions. So more of a report card, in essence, on the progress we have made, which I think is really important to consider.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. And then on February 18th, there'll also be the Clean Water
Yes.
Rally, which is a statewide effort. All environmental groups and allies are coming together to Tallahassee to encourage our state legislators to sign the Clean Water Declaration to protect our water here in the state.
And that's something we probably need to devote an entire show to in itself. Florida
Exactly.
waters are in big trouble, and they need our help.
Exactly.
Yes, that's very much the case. And we've got less and less groundwater all the time. The straws, as they're sometimes called, that are being punched just into Pasco County are really depleting the aquifer. That's been an issue for years where we know that the withdrawals from the aquifer are routinely more than is permitted by SWIFT mud. That's being done by Mosaic for phosphate mining and any number of things.
And the contamination. Our beautiful springs are no longer as beautiful.
Any final comment, Jennifer? We're coming close to the end of the program.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I just want to make for folks who are interested in reading Shelfield stories, we do have it up on our website, but we encourage, actually, folks not to download it on the website, but to get a printed copy from Steel Valley Printers. So the all the proceeds that go from ordering the stories are going to go directly to families impacted by dirty drilling. And so the number for that is 412-461-5650. That's 412-461-5650. It's Steel Valley Printers. And again, this will bring proceeds, get proceeds to the families that have been severely impacted.
You know, we should get all this information that we've gotten from our guests tonight up on our Facebook page.
Well, we probably will sometime after midnight, which would make it Tuesday. I'll definitely do it on Tuesday. Well, Jennifer Rubiello from Environment Florida, thank you for appearing on Spectrum 360. Also, I'd like to thank Kofi Hunt and Chuck Churgeon for talking about the Paula Whithouse case. We're going to have more Spectrum 360 next week, so tune in next week, and we're going to have many more new segments right here on this local program. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
We can make it happen.